is there such a thing as a perfect beast? Well, you know, if anybody should know.
This is Phil Lairness, Chilpack Hollywood Hour co-host, filmmaker, and Los Angeles correspondent, congratulating you for tuning into the Midweek Drive on Siren 107.3 FM and sirenonline.co.uk. Well done.
Yes, it is well done, isn't it, Phil Lairness?
I don't remember recording that. How? That sampled? Was that just sampled together through digital wizardry?
Well, you know, syllables that I had uttered on earlier shows. Katie Grimason wasn't picking up. She was on the telephone line. The landline wasn't. We had to do something to fill the time. You know, that's what we do here. You know, it's a crucial thing. How's the show been for yourself? This is the time, effectively, Gail and Brian, where we turn to our Los Angeles filmmaker and director to give us notes, director's notes, the sort of final wrap up of the show. We sort of find out what bits we can use again, which bits we would never use again, ever, which we can juggle with, etc. I can't even sort of get a little heads up in terms of what the Facebook comments have been about, because as you were, I'm just looking at a black screen here, so you know, who knows what could happen.
You are blind as a bat, flying in the dark, out of control, which means it's the Midweek Drive. my first note, Alex, actually refers to last week's Midweek Drive, because as you know, you were on location. It was a pre-record.
It was an audio postcard.
An audio postcard, if you like to call it. I, on the other hand, have no idea what that means. And so because I was not able to do my usual wrap-up spot, I didn't have a chance to congratulate you personally for the single greatest question anyone has ever asked in an interview in the history of great media.
I think you need to contextualize this, because Brian might sort of turn around and say, interrogatives.
You know, who can remember? I could make up all the details around it. It will become apocryphal in the future. It may already have become thus. But you were interviewing someone who had a display, and what I gathered as you set the scene was behind him at the display, he had live models alluring people to his sales display, and you asked him, do the models actually talk?
Real people, they
are models, granted, but they're also human beings, Alex.
They were dressed in wedding costumes. They were dressed as brides at the Great Yorkshire Show.
That's a question that Michael Bay asks, I think, on set of all his movies.
Yeah, okay. You see, that's the magic of doing these audio postcards, and it's probably the reason Hannah O'Brien hasn't turned up this week. Maybe she's poorly. I don't know.
Alex, my good friend, my two favorite parts of the show thus far are, of course, Katie not being available so that I was able to get more time. And two, good on you, Katie. That's why I love you. And also, Alex, finally, you getting to use the obituary, the eulogy for Ernest Borgnine that you wrote and first brought to us some 9 months ago on the show when you were convinced he was dead then. So
let's contextualize this again. We were doing a piece with Gene Bruce Scott, obviously co-host or co-star with Ernest Borgnine in the series Airwolf. And for some bizarre, yes, I had got it into my head. Didn't check my bad journalistic habit, etc. I thought that Ernest Borgnine had indeed passed up to the great studio in the sky a little bit sooner than he had. But maybe it's just, you know, looking ahead.
There is a wonderful new series on Home Box Office here in the States called The Newsroom, by Aaron Sorkin, who created West Wing and who wrote the Oscar-winning screenplay for The Social Network. He has a show called The Newsroom. It's set in a cable news network. And on this week's show, it focused on the shooting of Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. And it pointed out the fact that every single network, every single news show in the United States pronounced her dead, all from one new unconfirmed news report on National Public Radio, and all the network newscasts ran with it, all the cable newscasts ran with it, and she was in fact not dead, and is to this day alive and recovering. And the theme of the show, which was expressed, was more or less the news should not be pronouncing someone dead. Doctors should be doing that. And the caveat, of course, is the news should not be pronouncing people dead. Doctors should, or barring a doctor, Alex Lepchuk.
There you go.
So,
and many a student I've taken in the past I've thought were possibly suffering from brain death, but that's okay, I'm not going to talk about them, not allowed.
I was taught many, many decades ago as a trainee journalist that the only thing you believed Vatican Radio was the death of the Pope.
There we have it. Yeah. Before we go into your chance to speak to both Gail and Brian, Phil, just a little note and a little heads up to the Yorkshire Agricultural Society, because it was the first time they had to cancel since Foot and Mouth, of course, and the Second World War. But they have actually written to 600 or so of the businesses that were involved. They've offered 2/3 reimbursements to cover the cost of their stand. It'll cost them around about £700,000, but allowing for that, as Nigel Pulling, indeed, a friend of the show, actually said, the remit is to support and encourage agriculture, and it'll continue to do that. Staging this Great Yorkshire Show and its sister event, Countryside Live, remain at the heart of our activities, and it's nice to see that they have actually reimbursed it. So well done to Nigel Pulling and the whole team at the Great Yorkshire Show. So I just wanted to do that. And yes, the models can talk as well. So yeah. Over to you, Phil.
Win, win, win. I, of course, all three major topics that have emerged in this show are near and dear to my heart. Stories surrounding how 9/11 was in the zeitgeist prior to the actual event, of course, documentaries, and Canada. And I am reminded of the story about how when there was, during the Reagan administration, and patriotism was at an all-time high here in the United States, and Canada felt like it needed to develop some patriotism of its own. So either a national weekly, it was either Maclean's or the CBC, I can't remember now, but they ran a contest with all these marvelous prizes to fill in the phrase as Canadian as blank to rival as American as apple pie, for example. And the winning entry was as Canadian as possible, given the circumstances.
And let me guess.
That's why we love Canada. That's why we love Canada.
It sounds like it was a Margaret Atwood phrase.
Oh, Margaret Atwood. How marvelous. You just mentioned one of my all-time favorites. Wow.
But we have a friend in Canada, a guy called Patrick Watson, who was very much the senior broadcaster in the 60s. He had a very famous show called This Hour Has 7 Days. He's in 80 now, but he was chair of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation and so on. And he made a series of films about great Canadian moments, which include things like the invention of the mask that ice hockey players wear.
Yeah, Jacques Plante's mask.
And there's one wonderful, meticulously made. These things cost several $100,000 each to make. They last a minute and a half or so.
No, they last for many games.
No, not the
don't fight game.
Not the helmet.
There's
a reconstruction of a train leaving St. Louis in the States, right, in the early 30s. Big steam train, and there's a couple saying goodbye, and the young man's on the train, and he's saying goodbye to, obviously, his sweetheart, and he says, no, I've got to go, this will make our fortune, he says, and he hands her a piece of paper as the train pulls out, and she unfolds it, and there sketched is Superman, another great Canadian invention, okay?
And another great American invention, completely robbing the creator of Superman out of any profit participation.
Yes, exactly, yes.
Welcome to the States.
No, actually, I just have to tell you the best one of these is the first one that he made, which was a bunch of French explorers, voyageurs, right, advancing at the end of a long lens, so they're marching and barely moving, right? And then there are a bunch of Native Americans are moving towards them equally at the end of the long lens, and they get together, and the Native American says something in his language, Anawada, Canada, and the priest who's with the Frenchman.
That's a genuine translation,
yes,
right?
Whatever. Okay. The priest who's with them says he's saying the name of this country is Canada, and a young lad at the back, you know, French guy, says, "No, he isn't. He's saying, 'Come to my village.'" So even the name is slightly off there. Never mind.
That is the national motto, though. Canada, come to my village.
Come to my village.
When Gail mentioned Mr. Haddock earlier,
yeah,
it reminded me of one of the most frustrating things for me. He of course, created and wrote, I think, like 90 episodes of a wonderful show called Da Vinci's Inquest.
That's right.
And it's so frustrating for me that Canadian shows don't import well to this country, and there's some kind of bias about it. Canadian actors, as you listed, import very well.
Yeah.
But the shows don't, and yet we are, even if we don't watch them, we're aware of BBC shows. We're aware of the shows in Great Britain. But no one that I ever talk to knows about Vinci's Inquest, and it's such a fun show.
I know.
And I'm not quite sure why that is. Maybe it's resentment over, and this is not even a joke, maybe it's resentment over how many television jobs got lost in this country when the shows moved to Canada for production. And maybe because of that, there's this sort of protectionism against importing quote-unquote Canadian shows. I don't know.
It might be part of it, but I think, you know, what Chris often does, because he did it in Da Vinci's City Hall, he did it again in Intelligence. Did you see that at all?
I have not, no.
Oh, boy. Treat yourself. It is so good. It is so smart, and it might import. But, what he did was he based a lot of the storylines on current events in Canada, in the news. And so Canadians, when they watched it, went, "Oh, yes." And, you know, so there was a real sort of local resonance that I can see might not play across the border.
Mm, right, where we're not even, yeah, that's true. It is remarkable, having traveled the world, making my documentary "The Truth Is Out There," and realizing, and even before that, touring with a fictional documentary I had made called "Karl Rove, I Love You," which is finally getting a major European release.
Right.
But what I learned was, all around the world, people have an awareness of what's going on politically in the U.S. that even Americans tend not to have, and we certainly don't have any awareness of what's going on in the rest of the world. For example, if someone asked me what's the latest with the Greek debt crisis, I would say the Greeks have a crisis and they're in debt. That's pretty much the knowledge that I would have.
Genius, you know, as Los Angeles cutting edge once again, you know, striking through that whole process. Very good. We haven't had a chance to really plug the fundraising for your latest movie with Lee McCloskey, because you've taken to an interesting funding model for that, but it's still not too late if people are sort of listening and they think, yes, we want to support this. How can they do that, Phil?
Well, they can visit Kickstarter and they can type in my name, Phil Lairness, or if they can spell the word hieroglyph, they can type in Hieroglyph of the Human Soul, which is the name of one of his master artworks, a living, breathing space that tells the mythological journey of how we became conscious human beings. And I love that you give me the opportunity to talk about this, because when I was hearing everyone speak about documentaries, you know, I think one of the reasons that there is so much affection and attraction for documentaries now is that that's where we go to find stories that give us intimacy with a subject matter. Storytellers used to have the freedom in film, I think, to really create intimacy between an audience and their characters, and that's less and less so in the commercial marketplace. But in documentaries, you really get an intimate relationship with characters, and I think people are hungry for that. I was doing an interview about Hieroglyph of the Human Soul, and someone actually asked me, well, is it a straight documentary, or will there be a story? And the truth is, these days, all the best stories are in documentaries.
I was just going to say, that's an extraordinarily silly remark, it seems to me, with respect to whoever said it to you, because, you know, the whole point about documentaries is that's what Flaherty discovered when he made this film in 1921 with Nanook. You know,
of
that
the
you
north.
Take all of the north,
exactly.
That Nanook.
Right.
When you, if you just shoot material and just throw it together, it's not going to work. The thing that makes it work is exactly because you manipulate whatever mold, mel, you know, the material, so that it does tell a compelling story, which is character driven. I mean, that's the
exactly.
whole essence and of documentary.
And that's it, Brian. I mean, I think we're at this time where too many filmmakers are taught that story is plot. They use plot and story interchangeably, and they're not the same thing.
It's because
story
they
derives
don't.
From character. And nowadays, if you're seeing a film that has a rich and compelling character and that offers you an opportunity to get to know the good, the bad, and the so-called ugly that makes up that character, and thereby walk away, hopefully, with a closer relationship to all those aspects of your own self and the people around you, you're watching a documentary. It's documentaries that do that. And it's the one good thing I must say that I think came from the popularity of reality shows is that the techniques of documentary became second nature to a wide viewing audience. And so those people that grew up on reality shows are the ones now that are gravitating towards Netflix and watching documentary after documentary after documentary.
And it's good that Ilana Raine will be making a welcome return to the show next week, talking about her ongoing documentary work as well. So she's connecting with us in another sort of fine show, together with Rebecca Poole, who also rejoins us next week to join us musically speaking. So great stuff as far as that's concerned. But the time has now arrived, Phil, where I need to ask your good self to actually throw the interrogatives at Professor Brian Winston and Professor Gail Vanstone about how they've experienced, actually in Brian's case it's his third show, actually a third or fourth possibly, and of course a regular in various ways, so a bit of a season pro, but it's been Gail's first ever midweek drive on Siren FM, so over to you, Phil.
Well, then I've got three questions. Gail, have you enjoyed your debut appearance on the midweek drive?
Yes, it's fine after I stop trying to destroy the earphones.
We don't talk about that, Gail. What goes on in the studio stays in the studio. That's our official line.
Oh, no. Just, yes. First, broken, play. First rule.
Yes, yes.
Oh, it's been great.
And Gail, I certainly speak for me when I ask, have you particularly enjoyed your telephonic link with Phil Larness from Los Angeles?
I have. It's like hearing a voice from home.
Oh, well, there we are. A voice from home.
And I certainly hope, Brian, Gail, that we will get to enjoy hearing you on the Midweek Drive again in the near future.
There we are. Brian, okay for yourself?
It was really interesting. It was your usual collection of wonderful guests, and what a good time we all had. And indeed, we've done right by Canada. There are not many people can say that.
Precisely. It's another campaign that we've been sorted. I trust this is referred on to Dean Haglund for your next Chilpack Hollywood Hour.
I'm going to have a T-shirt that I'm wearing during our next show that actually says, I've done right by Canada.
Tomorrow morning, we're back with the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. We'll have Julie Corden from the International Office at the University, and indeed Sarah Bullimore, together with Richard Fitzwilliams, Peter Kerr, William Sitwell, and indeed how to actually get into training for the Great North Run. All this and more after our little quote for the day, Sophocles, his line, a short saying, oft contains much wisdom. Thanks to Malcolm Tomlinson, Cameron Tilbury, Dean Forbes, Michelle Munro, Arthur Weingarten, and Phil Leonis, and thank you, dear listener, and thanks certainly to Professor Gail Vanstone and Professor Brian Winston. Can we all say bye-bye?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Here's Bruce Springsteen.